Richard Roper is here.
Yes.
And we would like to tell people what to go see this weekend.
Let's talk about some movies. Why don't
Let's do it.
Want to start with Christopher Robin. People have been talking about this for a long time. This is a movie about Christopher Robin, hence the title Christopher Robin. Now, last year, we had a movie called Goodbye, Christopher Robin. That movie was about the real-life A.A. Milne, who wrote the Winnie the Pooh books, and his actual grown son, who was Christopher Robin and never went by that name the rest of his life because he didn't want to be known by that. This Christopher Robin is about the Christopher Robin in the stories, okay? So now we're not talking about the real Christopher Robin. We're talking about the real Winnie the Pooh Christopher Robin.
Yeah. This is very confusing.
It is very confusing.
When I saw the commercial for this, I thought, wasn't this already out? Why is this coming out again?
Well, last year was about the author and his actual son. Real-life story of the author and his real-life son.
And you didn't love that movie.
No, I didn't. Because we found out that his son hated him for putting him in those books as a kid. Then he went to boarding school and got beat up for 8 years because they figured out that it was Christopher Robin. And then he was estranged from his parents for most of his adult life and didn't want anything to do with the Winnie the Pooh legacy.
Got it.
Remember, like, back in the day, Hook. Remember, Peter Pan was played by Robin Williams. Now he's grown up and he forgot he was Peter Pan.
Mm-hmm.
And then they went and got him back to fight Captain Hook. So this is more in that vein. So it's about the Christopher Robin of the childhood books. So the movie starts off in the Hundred Acre Wood, and we see little Christopher Robin playing with Piglet and Eeyore and Owl and Roo and, of course, Winnie the Pooh. Then he grows up, Christopher Robin, and is now Christopher Robin, who works in London at a suitcase factory and has forgotten all about his childhood until one day he's on a park bench despairing how his life has not turned out the way he wanted it turned out. And who should be sitting on the park bench right next to him?
What to do? What to do indeed?
Pooh?
Christopher Robin.
No. You can't be here. This can't be happening. Stress.
It's not stress.
God, I'm stressed.
It's Pooh.
So exhausted. Evelyn warned me.
I like to be warmed. Warmed and cozy.
I've cracked. I've totally cracked.
I don't see any cracks. A few wrinkles, maybe.
Very sweet.
But I'm a little creeped out
now. Here's what you have to go with when you see the movie. So it's a combination live action with the CGI. And what we go with here in the rest of the movie is that Winnie the Pooh and the rest of the creatures from the Hundred Acre Wood are now in real world London, like around, you know, right at post World War II, 1950. And they're part of the fabric. I mean, if anybody else sees them, it's not like just Christopher Robin can see them. If anybody else sees them, they pretend like they're stuffed animals and they don't talk, but they're real characters in the movie. And then it's all about just Christopher Robin, as you see, reconnecting there with Winnie the Pooh and company. And that's Jim Cummings is the actor who's doing the voice of Winnie the Pooh there. He's been doing his voice, Winnie the Pooh, for 30-some years.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
on TV and specials. Sterling Holloway was the original for years, way back like in the 50s and 60s, who did Winnie the Pooh. But this actor, if you recognize that voice, it's because he's always been Winnie the Pooh. So when you hear that voice, I think that helps a lot, too, because it sounds like Winnie the Pooh. And then it is going to make you cry. You will cry.
Really?
She just did that little scene there because you see a grown man in his 40s, you know, trying to, you know, live his life, and he's forgetting about what's important and neglecting his wife, neglecting his daughter. And then all of a sudden Winnie the Pooh shows up and says, "You have to help me find my friends. I can't find my friends," which is clearly a metaphor for him finding his purpose in life. And there's that purity and innocence to Winnie the Pooh. But there's always been something kind of melancholy about all of those little characters in the Hundred Acre Wood waiting for Christopher Robin to show up so that he can get him some honey for Pooh, you know.
Winnie the Pooh always kind of had a little it appeared to me that he might have needed Prozac. He always seemed a little down, wasn't quite the same.
Yes, that's true.
You know, I mean, I'm more of a yogi. You know,
Yogi. Hey, boo boo. No, when he is, you know, he has self esteem. He talks about how he's a bear of very little brain, and then of course Eeyore, super depressed, and then most of the characters, if you look at it, have different psychological and emotional needs. You know, Piglet's very afraid and is a coward, but you know they all kind of lean each other. They're their own kind of family. But that Hundred Acre Wood, it almost has this kind of supernatural purgatory feel to it whenever you're there, because they kind of live in this land where time does not move on.
Tigger's a schizoid.
Tigger's,
right?
You know, kind of crazy with all the energy.
Yeah.
And you know, obviously, and also the fact that you've got a kangaroo and a pig and a bear and a donkey all living in some wood in England.
Now, how do we work them into London? Do people see them, or is he the only one who sees them?
Winnie the Pooh is looking for his friends. He goes through, you know, goes through kind of a portal and finds himself in London, and he finds himself, he recognizes Christopher Robin, even though he hasn't seen him since Christopher Robin was a little boy.
That's lazy writing that they had to find a portal.
Well, it's a tree. You know, it's that tree at Pooh Corner. You know, there was a door that no one ever took. So three stars for Christopher Robin.
Oh, sweet.
I liked it.
I'm ready for something heartwarming.
You do have to get used to that animation, though, because it looks exactly, Pooh looks like Ted's cousin. Remember the Ted movies?
Because
it's the same sort of technique. And he looks so in the first 5 minutes, you're hoping that Pooh doesn't light up a cigarette and a bong and starts cursing, you know? Or that Ted doesn't show up.
But
it's very sweet. You could take the kids to this one. I don't know if youngsters today know about Winnie the Pooh. I think it's still pretty popular,
I think even McDonald's gave out some kind of a Winnie the Pooh toy in their Happy Meals recently. And so, it's
well,
retro,
this is part of the genius of Disney, too. They've done this before. There was Finding Neverland, which was the story of J.M. Barrie, who wrote the Peter Pan books, right? There was Saving Mr. Banks, which was the story of the woman who wrote Mary Poppins, and then you go back in her life and see that she had a nanny that was like that. So that's a way of revisiting these famous stories and then telling them from a different perspective.
Did Disney do the one from last year? Milne one?
No, because that one, like I said, that one, if you read about the author of Winnie the Pooh, he was a World War I vet who was, back then they called it shell shock, right? Suffering
PTSD.
From PTSD, went, you know, into the country because he wanted to write all these revolutionary anti-war tracts, and then he finally wrote Winnie the Pooh kind of to keep his little boy amused, and his little boy was, at birth, was known as Christopher Robin, people figured out who the real Christopher Robin was, and they put him on tour in the States. He turned into this huge celebrity, and then everyone, you know, he came to hugely resent his parents and then stopped talking to them, and his mother wouldn't even see him on his deathbed, Christopher Robin, because he had abandoned the family.
Okay.
So that wasn't the fairy tale, you know. Sometimes you just want to stay with the fairy tale.
All right. So let's just stick with Winnie the Pooh. Three stars for this particular
Christopher Robin
is the name of the movie. All right, we're going to find out if The Spy Who Dumped Me, starring Mila Kunis and Kate McKinnon, is actually worth seeing. We'll check that out right after. And this is all brought to you by Arkadek, by the way, Richard Roper's Reviews. Arkadek of Chicagoland. Those are our guys.
Yes.
And we're going to go party on that Arkadek deck.
Yes, we are.
Right. More deck picks coming your way on the Insta.
Beer bongs tonight.
Here we go.
All right. But first, let's check in now with Judy and find out what's coming up at the bottom of the hour.
Stop the Violence ends at Wrigley. We'll explain.
And we have Violetta now.
Then there's this. Watch Micah and Joe, Micah Mater, Joe Donlin, weeknights on WGN TV News at 9 o'clock.
All right. Richard Roper is here, brought to you by Arkadek, arkadekofchicagoland.com. Let's talk a little bit here about The Spy Who Dumped Me, Kate McKinnon's new movie from Saturday Night Live.
Kate McKinnon, we love her on Saturday Night Live.
We do.
Such a huge talent. I think she's still having trouble finding movie roles that suit her talents. And I love Mila Kunis. She's been funny since Forgetting Sarah Marshall, the Bad Moms movie. So you think, that sounds like an inspired pairing. And they play two ordinary gals who somehow get mixed up in the world of international spydom. And next thing you know, they're on their way to Europe and they're dodging bullets and getting involved in assassins and all kinds of people trying to get a hold of that one flash drive that's going to save the world or destroy the world. And all of a sudden they become really good at driving like stunt people and firing their guns. And it's just so stupid and so overdone. And here's the thing, too. In fact, here's a little clip where the two of them are trying to figure out their next spy move.
I don't trust anyone anymore.
You trust me, though, right?
Yes, of course I trust you. You don't count.
Okay, good, because this is not some fake spy friendship that the Russians put together.
Dude, shut up. I know. Okay, Drew said that if we don't deliver this package, a lot of people are going to die. What if we don't do it and then there's like a terrorist attack or something?
Well, what did he say to do?
We have to get it to a cafe in Vienna.
Austria, Vienna?
Yes, that's what he said.
Okay, well, why don't we do that then?
Do what? Go to Europe when a bunch of people are trying to kill us?
Do you want to die having never been to Europe? Or do you want to go to Europe and die having been to Europe?
Why are those my only two options?
Doesn't that sound like one of those improv Olympic things you go to where two people are sitting on the chairs and you go, you're two regular Americans who are now in a spy ring. Go!
It does.
Which
absolutely.
Is the problem with the whole movie. It just feels thrown together like that. And the other thing is, though, they filmed it, and it's a hard R movie. They filmed it like a Jason Bourne movie. So when there's violence, it's really hardcore, and bones crack and blood Ooh. Gushes and all of that kind of stuff. And then you go to the quirky comedy stuff. So I think they're trying to go for like a modern day 48 Hours or Lethal Weapon. But if you look back at those movies, those people were already cops. So now you just have, you know, they get, it drives me nuts when they do these movies where the average people get thrown into something and then all of a sudden they can drive like stunt people and they can go over the hoods of the cars and they're taking out the assassins and they never really blink about it. And yeah, we're supposed to, you know, we're supposed to suspend disbelief, but it's so off the charts. Ridiculous. And then the real sin is it's just not funny. And they waste the talents of Mila Kunis and Kate McKinnon. You can see Kate McKinnon in particular trying her best to make mm-hmm. a scene work.
Right.
Going way over the top.
Basically in all of those films that she's been in that
the
have
Ghostbusters
been disasters.
Movie was like yeah. that. And I think as well as that works on SNL in that format, it doesn't work comedy-wise in the movies when you go way, way, way over the top. You have to be Charlie Chaplin or Groucho Marx or Robin right. Williams. And even those greats sometimes, you know, gave their best performances when they kind of toned it down for the movies and did a different sort of comedy. So 1.5 stars.
Oh, boy.
It's That's really, a... really bad. It's
hey,
terrible.
Very quickly, like Father, this is Kristen Bell, Kelsey Grammer, Seth Rogen. This is a Netflix original film.
Yeah, we'll give a quick 3 stars to Like Father. We always talk about these Netflix movies. They're usually not very good. This is a Netflix original. If you've got it on your queue, it's just a nice comfort movie. She's career obsessed. He's her estranged father. They end up on a cruise together because that's what happens in movies like this. And you can just enjoy the journey along the way. Kelsey Grammer and Kristen Bell are very good together.
All right.
Nice.
Well, how about that?
A couple there to see.
All right. Let's check in with Judy. She's got the news. And then a special Thursday appearance of the Canarable Wagon. It is never too early in the week to have that happen. Coming up right around the corner.